No one can define or measure justice, democracy, security, freedom, truth, or love. No one can define or measure any value, but if no one speaks up for them, if systems aren't designed to produce them, if we don't speak about them and point toward their presence or absence, they'll cease to exist. Donella Meadows, environmental scientist, educator, and writer. Welcome. This is the Leaders Commute podcast, brought to you by Acuity Business Consulting and produced by Business Radio X. I'm Jess Villegas, and we're coming to you from the Subaru of Gwinnett studio inside the Gas South Convention Center in Duluth, Georgia. The Leaders Commute podcast reflects on the dynamic of recalling past experiences that persistently return to us over the commute of our lives and prompt us to acknowledge their influence on how we think about business and leadership today. The commute theme is intentional. Past episodes have referred to what we have collected, delivered, and mapped in our life's journey. Today's episode, Life, Liberty, and Layups, encourages reflection on how we interact as passengers in the vehicles we have chosen to inhabit. My guest today is Ruben Davila, professor in the USC Marshall School of Business and lifelong friend and confidant. He's going to listen in and then join me as we discuss the implications of the message I hope to deliver well today. Welcome, Ruben. Let's get started. Thank you for listening, and perhaps you're even doing so on your actual commute. Early in our childhood, I and my younger brothers Mike and Javier loved to hang out at the local park with our favorite cousins, the Ruizes, playing games of checkers and caroms, hitting baseballs, and shooting baskets. A high point of the day would be to visit the snack bar with the few dollars we managed to save. On one particular day, we decided to buy some hot dogs with our money. Mike stood in line first, bought his food, and started to walk away. I took a bite of my hot dog as soon as I got it, excited to enjoy one of my all-time favorite foods, when my cousin Robert shouted, "Jess, it's Friday, you can't eat that." I immediately spit out my food and turned frantically to remind Mike it was Friday. But by this time, he was several yards away. "Mike," we shouted, "don't eat that hot dog." He gave us a puzzled look, so we started chasing after him. Mike was a lot faster than us, so this only encouraged him to run and eat his food faster. By the time we caught up with him, he was already finished. We tried to explain the problem, but he just flashed a big smile and walked away, seeming not to have a care in the world. The rest of the day, Robert and I strategized on how to explain to my mother, his aunt, why I did not take better care of my brother, and why I would be responsible if he did not go to heaven. In my last podcast, The Fog of Score, I referred to a key learning ground for how I would think about business and leadership in the future. For almost 15 years, I received my lessons every Saturday on the outdoor, sun-drenched cement courts of Liberty Park in Cerritos, California. The Liberty Boys were an extraordinarily close cohort of 30 or so friends, brothers, cousins, sons, and other such relations, united by their intense love of pickup basketball and the anticipation of pizza and Cokes at the local Straw Hat. That podcast focused how in later years the Liberty Boys' experience impacted my thinking as a recreational basketball coach. Today, I'll pivot toward how that same experience has informed my thinking about organizational culture. Our camaraderie was reaffirmed every Saturday morning through a sacred ritual of picking sides, playing ball, and then repeating the process multiple times over 2 to 3 hours. It was violated only by a rare instance of Southern California rain or a random superseding event, which resulted in a basketball court land grab by the park and recreation powers that be to sponsor some non-basketball event. One early spring morning, we had to give way to a makeshift but heavily attended craft fair being staged on our courts. Most of the group decided to find something else to fill their suddenly open calendar, but a renegade splinter group of diehard basketball junkies decided to caravan to find another park in which to play. We eventually found our way to a small park hidden in a residential area. It had only one court, which fortunately appeared to be available. We spilled out of our cars in anticipation of salvaging the day. but as we neared the court, we could see that one half of it was occupied by a couple of guys who were oblivious to our loud arrival on the scene. They continued to shoot baskets mindlessly and casually shoot the breeze without any sense of urgency or any indication they would be moving on anytime soon. "Hey guys," Cousin Robert blurted, "we've got 8 men here, and you've got 2. Why don't we combine and run a full court 5-on-5 game?" After some friendly prodding, they reluctantly agreed to the arrangement. Not wasting any time, we quickly self-organized into 2 teams of 4 and, suspecting they would want to play together, chose instead to assign them each to separate teams so that they could guard each other. This would be the first of a number of aggravations that would challenge the idea of a peaceful end to the day. The game began predictably, with all parties working to establish themselves in these unfamiliar circumstances. The buddies, Russ and Eric were their names, attempted to anchor their positions in the system with displays of aggressiveness and physicality and the occasional bellicose outburst. The Liberty interlopers were mostly respectful in their play and reasonably managing the competitiveness, but Russ and Eric seemed not to appreciate the culture being imposed on this gathering. The din of constant ribbing and trash talking only served to increase their anxiousness. But what seemed most aggravating to them was our unabashed and shameless promotion of each other, regardless of skill or performance. No matter if it was our phenomenal shooter, World, who made several long-range shots in a row, or Monero, traipsing through defenders to put more shots over the backboard than into the basket, or our display of muscle in the form of Bear and Jetty violently clearing out space and ripping down rebounds, or yours truly, missing my standard quota of easy shots and layups. None of it went unacknowledged, none of it disregarded, in terms of either effusive praise or an encouraging word. Russ and Eric were on opposite sides, but their increasing frustration resulted in them becoming more physical with everyone but each other. However, what they could not appreciate was the implicit permission they gave for everyone else to play in the same way, which happened to be the Liberty Boys' style of choice. Inevitably, things reached a boiling point. During one sequence, Eric fouled Robert extremely hard, which he interpreted as another level of permission to reciprocate. And he did. Eric went to the ground, but then snapped up immediately, seeming to brace for some type of action. Robert shot him a wry, no need for that smile, and said, "Brother, there's no problem. I just thought this was the way we were going to roll now." Eric relaxed only a bit as he tried to regain some composure. Unfortunately, Russ began to egg him on. "Eric, you don't have to take that from him. Go ahead, show him." 8 pairs of eyes were transfixed on Eric, waiting on some fantastic revelation. "Show me what?" Robert asked. Eric just bit his tongue, but Russ chimed, "My boy knows karate." We all stood in stunned silence. Russ continued, "And he's a black belt." "What?" Robert shouted. Russ reiterated, "You heard me. I know he's a black belt." That was it. The fuse was lit. Robert snapped back with, "Let me tell you what I know." And then he began a frenetic roll call, pointing one at a time to an undisciplined line of allies spread haphazardly around the court. "Brother, brother, cousin, 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 friend, friend. That's what I know." After a relatively short standoff, Russ waved his hands dismissively and said, "Come on, Eric. These guys are not serious ballplayers. Let's get out of here." We played 4-on-4 for the next couple of hours. To leverage past impactful experiences, I utilize an evolving context methodology. That is, the knowledge, competencies, and skill sets we build at the various junctures of our career can give new context and meaning to those past experiences. Let me explain. Over the 30 years since this incident with Russ and Eric, the retelling of this story has been replete with arrogance and bravado and several different versions of how the threat to the Liberty Boys' legacy was vanquished. But I often wondered what, if any, is a legacy, and why was it constantly under threat? Robert, though not one to back down easily, understood that his natural leadership instincts required that he first exhibit some type of calm presence and reflection before jumping into an action that might later cause regret. He did this on the court, and I suspect he did it through his years in the corporate world and then in running his own business. I believe what looked to be bravado in a defense of a legacy was really the safeguard of something that Destiny had assembled over a long number of years, a system expressing itself as a culture worthy of protection. Donella Meadows, whose quote I featured earlier, identifies several characteristics of systems that are operating well. Two of those are self-organization and resilience. Self-organizing systems learn, diversify, complexify, and evolve seemingly under their own energy. Ms. Meadows writes, "It is the ability of a single fertilized ovum to generate out of itself the incredible complexity of a mature frog, a chicken, or a person." The roots of the Liberty Boys are subtle, but they can be traced all the way back to my brother's experience with eating hot dogs and violating religious canons. Artesia Park was less than a mile from Liberty Park and close to where my aunt and uncle lived and conducted business. My brothers and I lived in Norwalk, the next city over, making it easy to gather and strengthen our ties. We protected each other in Artesia, we encouraged each other in Norwalk, and we fought for each other at Liberty Park. Over the next 10 years, we continued on to other familial exploits while our cohort unwittingly succeeded in growing a legion of individuals just as passionate about basketball as we were. Goochigan, Smokin' Joe, Bear, and Yeti, by virtue of their sibling relationships to me and Robert, were legacies. Big Rick and PJ came in through the high school connection with Robert. Reuben, the Hatchet Man, and Monero, all fellow St. Paul High School swordsmen, shored up the Catholic school contingent. World, Weaver, and Pilot connected to all of it through their various work relationships. And still others came via friends of friends. But regardless of how or when they arrived, once they came, they wanted to stay. Resilience is fundamentally a measure of a system's ability to survive and persist within a variable environment. Resilient systems are populated with multiple and diverse species working to keep each other in check. They also strengthen the system's ability to expand its utility and redundancy, which in turn drives longevity. The Liberty Boys dynasty operated consistently over approximately 15 years. Yes, there was a cast of core characters continually institutionalizing their traditions and reinforcing the expected behaviors, but there was also turnover. In the early years, you could spot the occasional uncle compensating for age and diminishing skills by picking out the biggest nephews to bully. That honor mostly went to my brothers, Mike and Javier, or Bear and Yeti, as they would come to be known in Liberty parlance. In time, you could welcome curious sons and nephews, finally old enough to hold their own and move from young spectators to energetic participants. My own son, Justin, went from playpen to play-in by the time he was 14. Once in a while, there was a special guest, an individual who enjoyed some success in college basketball and had some ties to somebody in our group. But the wild cards were in the invited friends, the most variable of our system inputs, who essentially constituted the pipeline to make sure there would always be enough resources to field a full 5-on-5 game. This is where culture was hardest at work. It tested skills, and it tested commitment. But most importantly, it tested character. My friend Reuben recently reminded me of a manifestation of this dynamic. A fast break occurs when the offense is moving quickly up the court to score before the defense can recover. Often, this takes the form of 2 to 3 players working to overrun a single individual. In this one instance, the defensive player was seeking to disrupt the momentum by clapping his hands and calling for the ball as if he were part of the offense. This is not technically cheating, but since t-shirts were the ubiquitous uniform of both teams, it seemed unethical to act in this manner. Play stopped, and Reuben chided the individual, "We don't do that here." Lex Cisney, author of Organizational Physics, The Science of Growing a Business, identifies 4 elements of an effective culture. Values, the qualities of expression that the culture considers most important. Rituals, formal and informal procedures and celebrations that the culture adheres to. stories, the formal and informal lore that describe the culture's values in action, and consequences, which is what happens to members of the culture when they violate the values. Looking back on the experience with Russ and Eric, indelicate as it was, I contend it was the culture that imposed the consequences that pushed them from the system that day, not arrogance or bravado. I believe the most critical characteristic of our group was a bias towards situational awareness. Each of us in the system needed to be objective about who we were on this roller coaster ride. The natural leaders tend to be associated with the most talent, and often that's the case. But the most critical skill is to quickly assess what will neutralize opponents and contrast that with the talents of the rest of the team, the rest of the organization. They don't need to be loud. They need to be dependable, confident, and calm. The executors, those with easily discernible talents that can be most leveraged at the right time, occupy the most productive position on the bell curve, which also gives them the best view of the spectrum of opportunities. The stabilizers must determine quickly what the system needs at any given moment within the constraints of their ability. Their incremental contributions are augmented by what they allow the rest of the team to accomplish. Once we understand where we reside on the ride in the system, it is easier to adopt the mantra of doing what is best for the whole of the system. Dr. George Sheehan was an American physician, a senior athlete, and an author known for his writings about the sport of running. I pulled the following from the oldest and most dilapidated book in my library, Running and Being, The Total Experience. He said, "Offense, you see, is play. Defense is work. When I'm on offense, I create my own world. I act out the drama written, I dance the dance, and have choreography. Offense is unrehearsed, exuberant, freewheeling. Offense is excitement, which provides its own incitement. It generates its own energy. But defense needs none of this. Defense is dull, boring, and commonplace. It is the unimaginative plodding attention to duty. It is grit, determination, and perseverance. It requires a simple act of will. There is never a day that you cannot play defense. All you need is a decision to put out 100%. All of my Liberty brothers, some of them sadly now gone, loved offense because that is where the energy lives and the stories reside. It made the pizza and beer taste better, and it created the ties that kept us together. Of course, when it came to offense, some of us had a lot more stories to tell. But not one of them ever shied away from defense, from the work necessary to become a part of one of the most competitive, respectful, and value-driven, compassionate groups of men that we have ever been associated with. We all came from different places and experiences, but in the end, it was never where we came from that was important. It was all of us making 20-footers, dropping dimes, and missing layups, working from our best selves on that day, and then being prepared to do it in the next. I'd like to make one last note. Some of you may have caught that early in the podcast, I talked about chasing my brother and not being able to catch him back when he was 8 or 9 years old. And over the years, he put on enough weight and height to where I eventually could catch up to him. And he got big enough to where he could start lovingly be referred to as Bear. But he always had a smile on his face. He smiled when he was fast, and he smiled when he was slow. I lost him at the end of 2022, and I'm dedicating this podcast to him. Thank you. Well, I'd like to bring in my very good friend, Ruben Davila. This is exciting for me. We became friends all the way back in high school, and I can't remember much of it other than us playing a lot of one-on-one basketball at half court and us continually talking about who was better, but he was better. I'll just say it right now. But I was better looking. No response. All right, Ruben, wonderful to have you on. And listen, I guess we'll open by me asking you, what do you think about kind of what I related there? I know you know the contours of almost all of that time frame. But anyway, what are some of the impressions you take away from kind of what I went through today?
It's interesting. So thank you for having me. I think this is fun. It was fun to listen to it because it was fun to listen to your podcast because it captured some of important memories and capture some important relationships that exist to this day. What's funny about it is I relate to what you said. Basketball is an interesting game because it's on a open canvas. There's a bunch of players that nothing's pre-designed, pre-organized. There's not markings in the way that you play. And it's how all of that comes together to create something. And to a certain extent, you know, life's like that. Organizations are like that. You talked about essentially developing a culture and that culture and how people interact within that culture and how they find their place and how they feel comfortable. It's so many different ways to go ahead and take that. But in its time and place, what's interesting is I was thinking about when I first got introduced, and I think I shared this with you a while ago. I mean, it was the Ruiz clan was a little bit more violent than I thought. And they talked a lot of trash. I came from an environment like that, but it was still different. So there's this idea about when you enter an organization, there's stopping, there's reflecting, and there's deciding how you fit in with that organization. There's respecting the culture that's already there. The other thing is the idea if it's a good culture, it's a culture that you want to be part of. The idea is, you know, the people that were there, the core group of the people that were there, we're all really good people that I think a lot of us interact with to this day. So a lot of fun things to talk about, and I'll kind of, instead of droning on, I'll kind of pass it over to you and see if you want to take it somewhere, but there's a lot of other places I can take it.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm gonna let you have a lot of license here. I'm just thrilled to have you on, so you can go anywhere you like, but maybe where we go from at this moment is because I think a lot about what happened during that time, I also think quite a bit of what happened after that time. That, at least for me, that whole situation ended when I left Los Angeles to move to Atlanta. And of course, you know, the world, the Liberty world didn't stop just because I left. I'm not sure how much longer guys were getting together afterwards, but I do know that they certainly enjoyed on my visits back home to try and get the group together. And so it felt like to me, you guys have been playing every Saturday for the next 10 years, and then I just happened to show up here and there. But it was a lot of fun. But I think what's compelling for me is when I agree with you, when I think about some of the characters and some of the really quality individuals that we got to interact with, and I try and sort of think about them one-on-one, at least obviously for the people that are still with us, that they've gone on to some level of whatever it is that they define a success. You know, I can think of what all those individuals do, and, you know, starting with yourself. You know, you've been a long-time professor in the School of Business at USC. I think it's over 30 years. I mean, that's no small feat. I've been managing to make a living and take care of my family for a lot of years. And you can say the same almost for everyone that was in that group. And I always wondered if any of them were impacted after the fact, the way I have been and continue to be. And I guess maybe I'll put that question to you, whether any of that impacts the way you think about how you teach or what you teach or anything at all. Does it affect how you conduct any part of the work that you do? Or even if it's not teaching, I know you've got a lot of other outside interest.
There's a basic component. So one of the things that we struggle with is technology. Technology is awesome because of the way it connects us. I mean, we had a little off-screen thing right here where, you know, we were looking at sound and how things work. I made the mistake of buying a new phone, and we're still wrestling with each other on how we're connecting. But you talked about a story with your brothers, and your brothers in that kind of recreational environment where you played caroms and did that kind of stuff. I had an independent experience over in Pico Rivera that was kind of the same. There was that thing where we came together. We were together as people. So one of the things that is really important to me now in my quest as a teacher, as an educator, is that the people that are sitting in my class, the students that sit in my class, actually get to know each other, actually get to talk to each other. It's one of the most confounding things to me. I'm confused, is that this last semester, there's about 45 people sitting in a room. They're all staring at their phones and none of them are talking. And I told them my quest in the beginning of that class is that they would make friends, that they would develop relationships, that they were sitting next to some of the most interesting people they would ever meet, and that they were blowing an opportunity if they didn't talk to them. And I accomplished that goal for some people, not for all, but you're talking about relationships that existed on a basketball court that exist. You and I experienced some relationships at a USC basketball court too. And some of those people that played there, again, it had its own culture. They didn't like outsiders very much. But outside of that, I run into people now, and you know, they're actually medical doctors. They're accomplished, you know, professionals too at the same time. But on that court, everybody was equal, and there was a mutual respect. So the idea about having relationships, I think, is important. And I think that's something that gets lost in a lot of organizations, that people aren't in the here and now and aren't necessarily looking at how to react to the person next to them and how to fit in. You talked about, you know, getting together. And one of the toughest things is when you get into an organization of any kind, in a basketball game, is how do I fit in and how do I contribute? And one of the things you can do is, you know, you talk about playing defense. Defense is, you know, nothing but hard work. But that's how I got into that USC basketball game. That USC basketball game had people that were, two Heisman Trophy winners, professional athletes, you know, guys that play on the collegiate level. And how does a little 5'7" chubby guy from Pico Rivera get involved in that game? And it's, you know, they're not going to pass me the ball until I prove I can hit a shot over months. But it was by playing defense and playing hard. And those relationships, like I said, I run into people to this day. And they mean a lot. They still mean a lot.
One of the things you said kind of speaks to something that always fascinates me. So, you know, I know your story pretty well, and you know mine, because we've shared each other's lives for a long time. But now it's just occurring to me now that one of the reasons we connected was because we had a similar experience, although our experiences weren't shared. You grew up in an environment where you were doing the same types of things I was doing. You had friends, you were interacting, you were forming a support group, and you were doing that, you know, a million miles away in Pico Rivera, or maybe 3 miles away. But we brought all that with us when we came together, you know, and we didn't have to speak it. Just somehow there was a reason that we had to keep talking, and maybe it was just only the fact that you had a basketball and I wanted to shoot it, or maybe vice versa, and we did it. But what fascinates me, and what talk speaks to not only the challenge of a culture, but the beauty of a culture, is now you take that times 20 people, their stories, the way they've evolved, and they've been doing them over years. And the whole idea is that at some point in time, they all come together to meet and interact in ways that bind them that they don't necessarily aren't necessarily aware that that's happening. So I think about some of the guys that we played with. For example, Steve W. I won't say his last name for all that. He might be a drug cartel person now. But somehow the way he played his game was he was just so graceful and fast and so athletic, and people just started calling him, said that his game was like a dream. And then somehow that became Dream Weaver. And then pretty soon you drop the dream and you go to Weaver. But my point is, I met him when he was whatever, 28, 29 years old. I presume he had a life and some experiences before I met him. But whatever he experienced, somewhere Venn diagrammed into what I experienced, and now you do that for 20 or 30 people. I'm just completely fascinated at what is really a sacred event. And then you think about the complexity of having them all work together. So then you get to issues of how do those things align. And I mean, just because you use the word culture doesn't mean you're in a good culture. I consider this a good culture because there was a lot of good people trying to do the right things. So I think that's one of the things that's most interested me. So what, I mean, do you agree with me when I say, I think for the most part, anyone that sort of graduated, using the term loosely, from that sort of cohort has essentially managed themselves well, and it wasn't necessarily because of Liberty. And maybe Liberty was one of their stops along the way. I don't know if you agree, but maybe you see the same thing that I do, that those people continue to be special to us today because they continue to be special in what they do.
Reflecting on your comments, you know, it was one of those things where the core group of people that were there were just good people. Good people in the sense that, you know, they had a fair sense of values. We weren't fighting and arguing on the court. I've been in games like that where people fight and argue, or they disagree, or they work at cross purposes. Not to say that everything was perfect, but people respected each other. I don't think this thing would have moved forward or lasted 2 weeks, much less, you know, several years, unless the core leaders of that built something kind of organically that said, hey, I want to get up and I want to go drive all the way to Cerritos to play in that game. You know, that's the culture I try to create in my classroom. One of the biggest things I've had to fight is COVID. And COVID and this expectation that students don't have to come to class and there's no value associated with class. And the idea is, you know, how do you create an environment where people want to come? And they're not going to want to come to listen to, you know, a stodgy old guy talk about accounting and finance concepts. But they want to come in if they figure that they're going to learn something valuable that will help them in their lives, and that there's somebody that they're sitting next to that they wouldn't see in any other way. So you think about all these people from this university with 20,000 people in it. They come together in a room for 2 hours and they sit next to each other. And how do I create interactions where they support and help each other? I actually take pictures now of the energy where, you know, I first time I explain something, it's on me. The next time I explain something, it's on them. People have to go to the front of the classroom. They have to explain things. They have to do it in teams. And how do I create that culture? That's what's challenging to me. And what I learned and I've evolved over time is to get them to support each other when they go up. So little segue. So I used to send people up the board individually to go answer questions. And a foreign student came up to me, and her culture, you know, people don't get up in front of the class and talk. They take notes and they regurgitate. And she was scared to death. She goes, please don't make me do that. And I thought about it and I go, well, what if I give you the question ahead of time? And she goes, well, she was reluctant, but we did it and it kind of went okay. And then I realized, why don't I send somebody up with a friend that you can take a friend with you to help you explain? And you can pick anybody you want. And it's not like a freshman high school dance where they can say no. You know, they have to go with you. So you can pick anybody that you want. Mm-hmm. And then two people became three or four people. And, you know, the culture in the classroom now, since that approach has evolved, is everybody understands this is the way it works. And they work with each other. And people don't necessarily listen, you know, look forward to the task at hand, you know, what we're covering. Sometimes they do if they think it has applicability directly to their lives, but they come together because they're excited to see each other. One of my proudest pictures on Facebook was at the end of last semester, students, you know, wanted to take pictures and stuff like that. And I said, hey, let's go outside and let's all take a picture together. And it's on my Facebook page, it's public. And it's people from all races and backgrounds that wouldn't necessarily come together from all over. You know, you talk about me coming from Pico Rivera, Norwalk. We had people from Whittier. We had people that actually Brave coming in from Orange County to Los Angeles. We got people from all over the world. And there's this idea that the person next to me doesn't look like me or they don't look like where I came from. But not forcing people, but creating an environment where they need to attack a task, where they need to work collaboratively, where they're responsible for teaching each other, creates a sum that's greater than the whole. And that's one of the things that, you know, I'm proudest of. So you talked about what came together organically. You talked about a bunch of people that are natural leaders that are actually, if you point at people that are started their own organizations that are entrepreneurs, you know, there's a bunch of people in there that I could name. And by the way, Weaver's name was actually Weaver. It's shocking. It was shocking to find out. It's actually funny that some of the people's names I couldn't come up with. So we ran into people were from different high schools that kind of knew each other. And they were always confused about who I was talking about because I just used the names that we used at the park.
Let me correct you. It's first name Dream, last name Weaver.
So I could never give him that. I can never give him the Dream. I can give him the Weaver.
But so. Not the Dream. I can give you the Weaver, but not the Dream. You know, something else you said kind of stuck with me. You're pretty direct, as you want to do. You said that when you met the Ruiz clan, you found them to be pretty violent. So, you know, without violating my wife's confidences, she's made some similar observations. We had a situation where I took her to a family picnic early on in our relationship, And, you know, as things are wont to do, there's always a little wiffle ball baseball game breaking out between friendly rival cousins. And when you're short first baseman or a batter, you know, of course you got to go get the new girlfriend who just came into, who maybe someday is going to be in the family. And let's just say it this way, it didn't end well. And I spent the rest of noon trying to explain. But listen, hon, they really are good people. It was a kind of an interesting kind of a situation. It also made me think of something else about this group. I think one of the just proudest moments, one of the most wonderful pictures I've got is when we moved from Los Angeles to Atlanta. Justin was 7 years old. And then one of my most favorite pictures is all of us sort of posing in a dark gym that we all broke into one day when it probably was raining. And there's my son Justin and my nephew, about the same age, sitting there on the basketball posing at age 14, 7 years later. And even now he and I talk about sort of the Liberty guys and what are they doing. And he knows them and he's friends with them and they're aware of his career and of his exploits. But it was just an extraordinary thing to be able to see someone in your family enjoy the kinds of things that they were watching over several years. So I thought I found that pretty interesting.
So you know, you talk about that, and you and I talked offline about the kind of how that all ended. And sometimes it just doesn't end on purpose. You know, things just change, and you and I were fortunate enough to have season tickets for the Lakers when they had Magic and Kareem and James Worthy and Byron Scott. And, you know, sometimes you think stuff's just going to go on forever. And stuff just happens in its own time and place. And one of the, you know, on reflection, you know, you're talking about your son. You talk about losing Mike. You talk about losing Javi, who are your brothers. And, you know, it just, life moves on. And the idea that one of the things that I think we all took that for granted is that, you know, it's just so important to enjoy kind of when things are working and things are humming and things are just good, just to enjoy those. And that's one of the things I learned because, you know, I've been at USC for 40 plus years and I know it's coming to an end. You know, I don't know if it's, you know, 2 years from now or 4 years from now, but I know it's coming to an end. And there's times when it works and there's times when you have to drudge your way through things, but it's important to go ahead and try that. So you started your story or the podcast with you being kids with your brothers. You ended it, and not that I'm saying that it's ending, but with your son and his friend, you know, 7 years old, and just kind of passing on this relationship, not of Liberty Boys, but just something that plants a seed. I know that one of the things that I thought was interesting is one of our friends, Rick, brought his son along to a dinner where a lot of the Liberty guys were together. He invited us to dinner, brought his son, and he wanted his son to see this is what people interact like. You know, this is our group. He wanted to show them that so he could experience that and see how, you know, we talked and what we talked about and how we were respectful when we did talk. And so we don't all agree, but we're always respectful and listen to each other. And that's a little bit too rare, I think, nowadays.
Yeah, I agree. Well, listen, you're mentioning of the Lakers there. I every chance I get, I like to somehow, what I'm doing is I adopt the glory of the Laker years by saying I had season tickets, and people always seemed amazed. I think they're probably bored of hearing it by now. But I also know you're a very clever guy. You know, you raised the Lakers, and now I have to talk about the fact, like, well, God, man, that was a fun time. And I used to have to figure out how to go from work to go pick up, you know, something to eat, to go meet you, to go play basketball before the Laker game. And so I'll just tell the audience here, it was probably about a 75-mile investment for me to get to work, get over to USC, get around and shoot some baskets with you, get a shower, pick up a burrito, and then drive over to the Fabulous Forum. And, you know, some of my favorite times were getting out there and seeing, trying to mix it up with some of those basketball players around USC. And, of course, pretty soon I was the outsider in that case the way you were. But now you're the insider and I'm the outsider. But it was fun, and I enjoyed it. But, you know, inevitably we have to get down to really – the story of the day. This is one that we've shared. And before we share it, I'll just say this. You and I actually preceded the Liberty boys, right? Our love of basketball kind of preceded Liberty, and then it was just a natural migration. So I think that's one of the reasons we hit it off so early. But, you know, I'm going to start this. Maybe I'll let you finish it. But I do want to tell everyone a favorite memory of mine is traveling to see you and play the game. And for some reason, at least the way I remember it, is whatever gym we wanted to shoot in wasn't available, so we had to go shoot in the other one, which maybe happened to be the girls' gym. And at the time, Lisa Leslie was one of the top players on the team, or the top player. And it was kind of like the park situation. They only had 8 people to run, and they thought we need 2 random placeholders, and which were us. And that was fun. We got to go back and forth, and I never touched the ball. I know I never touched the ball. You probably did. And in one particular instance, because I like to talk about fast breaks, I was on the receiving end of that of a fast break that was not going well. So I'm backing up. Lisa Leslie, because it's not official, decides that she's going to be a point guard. And now she's dribbling and dribbling. And I can only remember one of the coaches at St. Paul saying, when you're down 3-1, 3-on-1, you've got to make somebody pick up the ball and take away one of their options. So I thought, I'll be clever. I'll just pick Lisa Leslie's pocket. And then she'll be left there with 2 players with nothing to show for it. And so I remember making a move and slipping and falling on my butt and being so embarrassed. So there might have been giggling. It was probably you. But I remember thinking, and I'm sure this is not how it happened, but it seemed like a slow motion replay. I'm laying on my back. She's like stepping over me. It looks like she's thinking about a dunk. And to that point, I don't think she'd ever dunked before. And her girls are railing and screaming. And I'm thinking, oh, please, please do not dunk on me, please. She goes up. It seems like she gets the ball on the rim. She's holding it, and can't quite get it over the lip. And she comes down to the ground. Her girls are laughing and screaming. And in my mind, I said something like, don't ever bring that in here again. But maybe you have a different perspective on that ending. So is anything I said factually incorrect? That's really what I want to know.
Well, my reflection of it was like, and I think you talked about using inappropriate language. So I'll just say, looking at it, going, holy crap. There's Jess defending Lisa Leslie, who's considered one of the best basketball players of all time, and 6'5". So one of the things that was fun about that is this is one of the times where at 5'7", and I think you're 5'8", something like that, that since you were taller than me, you got to guard Lisa. But I remember thinking, what is Jess going to do? And I think, man, he had the presence of mind to fall down on the ground. And you can kind of see that confused Lisa momentarily. So unfortunately, I didn't bail you out because I was shocked at how smart you were to fall down. I should have come back to help play defense and jammed it all up. So I'm sorry I let you down on that. But I'm sure Lisa talks to her teammates about, hey, when this guy came in and got in my head and kind of messed up, and that helped her focus to go on to be a WNBA star and Olympic champion. So I think you were important in that. So those are fun times. Those are fun times.
That was fun. We'll have to get a future podcast. There's 2 or 3 other times I got embarrassed by Heisman Trophy winners over at USC. It was really, really a wonderful time. So, Ruben, I think we're going to wrap this up now. But any last thoughts about the subject? And, again, thank you very much. I really appreciate having you on.
You talked about a group of people that could adopt, that were somewhat opportunistic in building something that lasted for a while that there was no framework for. That's an important thing that a lot of people really aren't successful at doing. And we did it just in not a planned way, in an organic way. And it was because of the people that were involved. People are important. People are important. And relationships are important. And I think people don't put enough energy into that, as they should today. So I'll close on that.
All right, Ruben. Well, thanks a lot. We'll have to debrief here a little bit later, and you can point out other errors in my storytelling. But thank you so much for joining us on the Leaders Commute podcast, presented by Acuity Business Consulting. I'd like to thank our producer, Mike Salmon, for his work on this podcast and the great work he's doing to promote business in Gwinnett County. If you would like to reach out to me, you can do so at 678-644 9311 or at Jess at Acuity Business Consulting. You can catch a new episode every month here on Business Radio X, or you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you enjoy your favorite podcast. Until next time, I'm Jess Villegas, and you've been listening to The Leader's Commute on Business Radio X.